Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard.
Whoa. Stop the car. Everybody, quick. Go to your vast accumulation of comics and find your copy of Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 6. Corey, do you know why?
Yes. Bad Bunny, who showed up in wrestling the last two WrestleManias, is going to be playing a Spider-Man character that was in those two issues.
Yep. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 6 and 7, El Muerto. And we're talking last week, this book was selling for like $2.40 to $3. Do you know what it's selling for now?
I saw people posting on the Facebooks that it's $80 to $90 as of this morning.
And some are as high as $250. Have not seen any CGCs pop up, but you know they're on their way. And of course, the big deal about it, El Muerto, he only appeared for two issues. And this was what, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, first volume, second volume, just two issues, nowhere else in the Marvel Universe. But this is the first time they're having a Latino character headline in the Marvel movies. It's not the first time a Latino character has appeared in the Marvel Universe. And now we come to, does the Strode know? And if he doesn't, I'm coming and taking his omnibuses. Because who, Corey, way back in 1975, I'm being generous with a clue, was the first Latino Marvel superhero?
The second White Tiger.
You are correct. Danielle Jose
is going to be the first Latino in a Marvel movie.
He was the White Tiger in Deadly Hands of Kung Fu number 19, the magazine, way back in 1975. So I'm telling you,
Joe, you didn't answer my question.
I didn't hear it as a question.
Who's going to be the first Latino character in a Marvel movie?
Well, isn't it the Bad Bunny? Isn't that why everybody's all freaking about FNS?
No, in Multiverse of Madness, we're going to get America Chavez.
Ooh. So quick, what appearance did she appear in?
Oh, I don't know where she first showed up.
Well, we should find out.
Let me take a look here.
Corner the market there.
Oh, they've already cornered the market on that.
Oh, yeah, I suppose they have. Yeah, it's
they announced
weird.
it a year or two ago.
I don't know if this is a legit.
She appeared in Vengeance number 1.
Ooh. So, I don't know if this is legit.
She started using the moniker Miss America, which was Marvel actually had a Miss America character back in the 40s. She used Miss America, but then dropped it just for her name, America Chavez.
Yeah, they're only, let's see, $299, $350. Yeah, they're a little late for that one. I don't know if these are legit prices, because obviously the demand is super hot, and there's a whole segment of the collector market that are buying these things to slab them and to flip them and to whatever. Although it could be, because there are not a hell of a lot of these things published. Unlike our Deadly Hands of Kung Fu number 19, which is a very expensive book. Because it was a magazine, and back then, people weren't collecting the way they collect now. They weren't bagging, boarding. They weren't trying to keep them in good shape. They read them. They might not even have kept them. And of course, you've talked at mass about how the Marvel magazine sold.
Remember when you were closing down your shop? And I talked to you about how, you know, comic sales are down on everything. That period from, I would say, after Marvel declared bankruptcy around 96, 97, to, I would say, up to Civil War, so 2006, those books were horribly underprinted. That was when Marvel had their no reprint policy. They didn't allow for, if something sold out, they weren't going to reprint it. They didn't overprint, they would only send you your order. And people were ordering pretty light because Marvel had that policy of, oh, we got tons of stuff in the warehouse to send out. And they wanted to up Marvel basically wanted to up the pre-orders. So you look at the sales figures for your mainstream Marvel books back then, and they were pretty low. It wasn't till Civil War till sales started to climb back up again. So I would say any character introduced between 97 and 2005 is going to be one that is potentially going to be huge, because there aren't a lot of those books, and shops didn't order. You know, before that, shops would order ones for back issues. I don't know if you had that policy, but I know at Shinders, they basically would order about 10 to 15% of your mainline Marvel and 25% of Spider-Man and X-Men books to be kept back to be used as back issues. And
I never did that. I went for the sellout.
After the collapse of everything, nobody did it anymore. It was like when comic fans in the 80s, I'm buying one to read and one to bag. Well, when comics got to $1.25, $1.50, people quit doing that. So in a lot of ways, those late 90s books, they're the ones that are going to be hard to find.
Yeah, good luck with that. And of course, as we've talked about before, there are millions and millions, well, maybe hundreds of thousands, of obscure Marvel and DC and other characters that you never know when it'll come out of nowhere and become a hit. I mean, Men in Black, number one, looking at you, obscure Marvel Malibu title, sucked up into the Marvel thing, now owned by Disney. Not that they've done anything with it, but, you know, hey.
They did. What surprises me is Marvel hasn't done a Men in Black comic.
After they saw Malibu,
they didn't put out a trade paperback or any sort of reprint of the miniseries.
No. Well, they did a number one through American Entertainment and Wizard, because I have right here in my grubby little hands Men in Black number one that's got the Marvel Comics logo, the American Entertainment logo, and then the Wizard hologram. And this one, was signed by creator and writer Lowell Cunningham. And I don't know if this was available for Lowell as he went across the country and promoted, or if this was just something, hey, Wizard, let's, Marvel, can we have you do a bunch of these? I don't even know if it's black and white. Let me open it up. Excuse me while I whip this out.
Woo!
And I gotta make sure my grubby little hands aren't all greased up. Let's see, Men in Black.
I'm eating fried chicken with my hands. Let me get this comic out.
It's still black and white. And I think it's just a reprint of number one. Not that I would know. I've only seen a number one. I don't think it's an exclusive new story. Otherwise, it'd probably be like, new story! I think it's David Finch on the cover, though. Maybe not. I don't know. But it's out there.
Yeah, it's just amazing that Marvel hasn't ever reprinted that. I don't know if it's any good or not, but you still think there's a curiosity factor.
I'll read it eventually, and I'll let you know, but it's been autographed. It'll go down if I touch it again. Touch, touch, touch.
Let's see. Three issues were published in 1990, another three the following year. It was then adapted into a movie. See, there were tie-in one-shot comics from Marvel. Cunningham had the idea for the comic once a friend of his introduced him to the concept of the government Men in Black upon seeing a black van riding in the streets. And let's see, I'm looking for any reprints ever. Other than that, no.
I see a Men in Black 2. They're back.
Yeah, so there were tie-ins.
Still but comic. But that was 1991. So that was before Marvel bought Malibu. So
yeah.
So you could have a complete collection very easily.
Wonder how much they are. About $1 billion.
Who knows? I mean, fire up the old Cray 2000 here. Men.
Oh, about Tree Fitty.
Number one. And I'll limit it to collectibles. Let's see. Men, of course, we'll probably get. Oh, King in Black. Yeah, that's the one thing I really dislike. Oh, well, I'm not going through 100 and over 1,500 Men in Black, King in Black, just to find that. Although they do have that little advanced thing on the side, so I could go exact words, exact order. That limits it to 17. Let's see. Men in Black, a Harvey horror mystery chiller from 1957, so don't let that confuse you. Man in Black comes up because that was a Dark Tower Gunslinger yep. tie-in. Okay, let's keep going down. Looks like a... Yeah, there's nothing on eBay.
Hmm.
Let me just... Let's see.
Now, Joe, I do want to say that you sound like you're at the bottom of an aquarium.
It's the way it's going to be, son, so suck it up. We actually been emptying out the basement, so you're going to get more of the echo effect because I got this on here. Oh, there we go. Men in Black. CGC 9.4, $350.
Well, there's that's not bad at all.
Outside the not slab for $200. And then there's some of the movie adaptations. Men in Black 2, $89.
So I was right about $350.
Yeah, yeah. That signed one I was talking about, low as $19. So... They're pricey, but not, you know, you're not going to find them in the dollar bin. Or if you do, you know, you found something cool. So.
Now, I have been reading a ton of comics.
A ton of comics?
Yeah, I read an omnibus.
I was going to say I didn't read a lot of comics, but I too read an omnibus.
So and I've been reading some older stuff. So I thought.
Oh.
We haven't done reviews in a while. Oh, normally, sweet. When I do reviews, I try to do all new stuff. But I got some old stuff that I read that is still in print, and I think people would still be interested in. So why don't we do reviews? Joe, would you please start us out?
All right. Speaking of old, you know, I always talk about digging through cheap bins and finding old comics, but I never really talk about reading them. I decided to pull out one of them old ones, and I pulled out the Twilight Zone. Gold Key imprint number 88 from 1978. None of this, as far as I can tell, is attributed to anybody, although I do see it says T-Zone 88. So I don't know if that's artist or just some weird printing. But at this time, it was all short stories. The first one was The Meek Shall Inherit the Earth. And it has the typical thing, which we've seen in dozens of Atlas ads, where some guy is kicking sand on him and his girlfriend. Look out. Hey, watch where you're going. And then an oddly shirtless drawn Rod Sterling is slight of build, bully all his life. Marvin Mannenheimer has always dreamed of one day evening his score with his tormentors. Now Marvin's wish is to be granted from the Twilight Zone. And sure enough, he gets a, again, mild spoilers for a comic book from 1978. He gets in the mail, you know, his girlfriend's like, no, I love you just the way you are. Don't worry about it. He's just tired of it. And he gets a flyer. Says, tired of being a weakling? Now's your chance to develop a super body. Send in $5 now. And sounds possibly insane, but for $5, what do I got to lose? He gets a barbell. And as he picks it up, wait a second. I'm starting to feel bigger and strong as an ox. In a few short minutes, he's all buffed out. Is that really me? We'll take a break for the Captain Marvel Returns to Earth Twinkie ad. And then on the next page.
Which Captain Marvel, by the way?
The one we know. Marvel.
Oh, okay. The Marvel.
The uniform that Ms. Marvel would wear eventually.
Oh, not the original Captain Marvel. The Marvel.
Yep. And that's a good point. Anyways, he runs into his girlfriend. She's dubious because when he says, come on, let's celebrate. Ow, must you be so rough? And he gets to be kind of an arse at the dance. And he's pushing people around. He tries to, his girlfriend leaves in a huff. All the other girls around him like, ooh, we think your brain is gorgeous. Ooh, muscle brain. And he kind of blows him off as he's thinking because he misses his girlfriend. So he decides to go see her as he gets into a cabbie. He accidentally rips the door off. People start going, oh, my God, don't go near me. It's dangerous. And then he looks and he sees that he is slowly growing out of his clothing. He gets back home. He breaks the door down accidentally of his apartment. He's all his fault. His muscle builder. I wish I'd never set eyes on this thing. He snaps it in half and shrinks back to himself. I'm back to normal. So he, a few days later on the beach, sure enough, a beach ball smacks him in the middle. Hey, don't you know beach ball is illegal on the beach? I've got a good mind to what? To keep your ball, unless you promise to be more careful and everybody's happy. And Rod says, Marvel has grown a lot wiser thanks to a dumbbell he received from the Twilight Zone. But wait, the next story. It is said that a truly great actor lives the role he performs, becomes the character he portrays. That is why most thespians never achieve greatness unless they're fortunate enough to find a sponsor in the Twilight Zone. This was just a floating head on stage. No shirtless Rob this time. But the story essentially is this great actor that came out of nowhere, seems to be the greatest ever, has a competitor who's a little jealous. And as he spies on him, he sees that the great actor takes a little drop of something and he goes, wow, I should try this myself. Wow, what is this? A strange power surging through me. And just then he discovers that the guy who, the original actor, comes in and says, this was given to me by an old woman I befriended. She claimed to have witchy powers. He goes, mind if I try it for myself? Put that down. And they fight. And the second actor pushes the original down and no heartbeat. He's dead. Luckily, nobody saw me. So he escapes. And sure enough, as time goes on and nobody saw him, just looks like the original actor tripped and struck his head. He becomes the greatest actor ever known. His fame spreads till finally he's going to be on a stage, and a producer who wants to put him in a film is going to be in the audience. And the actor kind of freaks and he can't take any chances tonight. I'll swallow an extra amount. And on stage, he's playing Caesar and people are like, What's with him? He looks like Julius Caesar. Look at his makeup job. He's doing well. And sure enough, as the play performance of the fight, next thing you know, too brute, then falls Caesar. And all the other actors are aghast. Drop the curtain. What happened? He's dead. Fortunately, Archer Frey no longer has need of that medicine now that it's done its job of transporting him to the Twilight Zone. Oh, the stuff was found by people packing it up, and they said, this looks dangerous. Better dump it out. So, and there's a quick third one, just a quick two-story, but I'm not going to tell you about it because I want to get into some of the fun ads that I read. Because, like, on page right inside the cover, there's Super Pocket Toy Value, where you can get toy value number one, which is two high pipe fly gliders, or you can get plastic bubbaloons in five bright colors. That's where you like put it on the end of a straw and you actually make a balloon. You could get five die-cast Fever Erasers, all for only $1.50, 35 cent postage. So just check which one you want, and you'll get a free solar power toy catalog. You don't see that in today's comic. I already talked about Captain Marvel Returns to Earth. Twinkie, let's see. And we flipped through more. Here's, you could sell grit. There's Super Iron-Ons. You got Grizzly Adams, Sean Cassidy, Christy McNichol. Across from that, be the first to own the official Star Wars watch by Bradley for a mere $19.95 plus $1.25. That might be a collector item. Let's see. Over on page, there are no page numbers here. Exciting new flippets where you can take Spider-Man, Hulk, Underdog, Woody Woodpecker, and you flip it in the air and it lands on its feet. 75 cents a piece, $4. You can get all six of them for $4 plus 50 cents handling. Over there, there's Blammo, soft and sugar-free gum. Ask your mom to buy the money-saving box. Let's see. For the first time, the magic of Disney. You can tell us about your child, get your mom to okay it, and they will send you four Disney adventure books. Every delightful book is personalized with your child's name, birthday, friend's name, home, and pet. Introductory price for $12.99. So my guess is they're going to keep mailing you these things. Corey, did you ever join the T-shirt force?
No.
You could. You could get Sean Cassidy, Parker Stevenson, Peter Frampton, Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders. Oh, I tell you, as a kid going through comics like this, I wish I had the money to do it. To round up the ads, here's the American Circle Group where you get all those wonderful things. Here is a 10-in-1 instrument. Here's your x-ray specs, HypnoCoin itching powder. I did get at one time the 1001 free catalog, and it was legit. There were actually 1001 things you could mail away for. And I started, I went like maybe 20 pages in and just lost interest. I remember getting all sorts of weird things. Like I got this poster of Jack Daniels that you could get for free just by writing the company. They don't do it now, although, you know, I'm sure if you look around, you can probably find it. Let's see. Over here, there's some house ads for Looney Tunes. Join the fun. Elmer Fudd, Bugs Bunny, Yosemite Sam, the whole Looney Tune gangs in Gold Key Comics at your newsstand today. The last ads, let's see. 100-piece toy soldier for $1.75. Did you ever mail away for one of those?
I did not. I was not a toy soldier kind of kid.
I know they had like Civil War and Western. I've seen them on the eBays, so you can always look them up. Let's see. Over here, you could get authentic stone Apache arrowheads. 5 different types. And for 50 cents each, 3 for $1, 35 cents handling. And then they'll send you a free catalog of other Indian heritage collector items. And, of course, on the last page, the wonderful world of amazing live sea monkeys. I think I've covered that pretty good. The stories were subpar. The art was typical Gold Key blocky art. Nothing major to write home about, but nothing to really draw your attention to this. I did not buy comics on a newsstand ever, so I was never really exposed to these. By the time I got my first comic, The Amazing Spider-Man 178, I actually went right to a comic store. And I don't recall if they even carried Gold Key. I remember the Marvels. I remember some Superman, because I kept thinking, I should buy Superman, because he was the first. But I really don't want to. So did you ever buy Gold Key or that off the newsstand or whenever you went into a comic store?
They were ones that my parents bought. Actually, these were more my grandparents had. And I didn't like horror comics and stuff like that. But the Twilight Zone were more twist ending type stories. Yeah. So, and weird thing that I know, because I have all this stupid information in my head. Most of this series was written by Paul S. Newman, who is in the Guinness Book of World Records for writing the most comics. No, it's not Chuck Dixon, no matter what he says. It's Paul S. Newman, who churned out tons and tons and tons of stuff for Dell and then Gold Key. And they basically just used the Twilight Zone for more of the Dell. They called them mystery comics. Mm-hmm. They were kind of like horror comics, but they couldn't put horror on the cover. They had painted covers, and they were very workmanlike. They always had a twist ending, because that's what people remember the Twilight Zone. And it lasted a long time. It lasted until
I'm looking on Atomic Avenue. Let me just pop back a page, because the first issue was, let me get up to number, they got a number 0 in 62. It started in 1962, and the last issue was 92 in 1982. So about 20 years, if I'm doing my math.
Whitman.
And they have Gold Key and Whitman variant covers. So same cover, just different. And again, the Whitmans might have been in a 3-pack or something.
Well, the last issue was Whitman only, it looks like.
No, I got to... Yeah,
so it was probably one of those that was only available in 3-packs, because when Gold Key kind of went away, they still put out comics. That's why those the last Disney books are so expensive. They were put out through Whitman, and they were only in the 3-packs.
Yeah, they're showing a variant on 92, but I don't see what the difference is. They both seem to have Whitman logos. Let's see, the one I had, number 88, they're attributing Frank Boyle, Mike Roy, and Sal Trapini.
Is that Mike Royer?
It says Roy, but that might be wrong.
But Paul Newman wrote the vast majority of those. He was kind of their workhorse.
This might not be these, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows? They might not be correct. I'm just going off what they report. Because there's certainly, that's the first thing I always look for, is to see if it's somebody I know. So, but that was kind of fun. I may revisit a few of these in the future because, you know, as I'm digging through boxes and I see I probably paid like a buck or something. But I figure, you know, what the heck? It's a comic I didn't read growing up. And again, worth picking up. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was funny. The first story I read happened to be the classic, you know, send in $5 because we all know those ads. I'm here to pump you up.
The first book I am going to review is Hellblazer, Volume 1. This reprints the first 7 issues of the Hellblazer comic, as well as the 2 issues of Swamp Thing that tie into it. No, not the new 52 version, the original Vertigo version. And I am one of the things I'm doing, I'm going back. It's a 300-issue series. I've gone back and I've decided I'm going to read the whole thing because I read it when it came out, and then I would stack up and read issues. And then around issue 200, I would stack up and then not read them. So I want to just read the whole series. And this came out in 1988. It was one of the first books that sort of jumped off of what was happening when Alan Moore did Swamp Thing. And then a few years later, we got this book. We got Doom Patrol by Grant Morrison, when Karen Berger started to move in the direction that would become Vertigo. The first thing that struck me as I read it was, I did not like this art in any way, shape, or form. It's drawn by John Ridgway, and it's very clear that they were going for a very different art style than what was being done at the time. It's a very scratchy art style, and the problem with it is that it's obscuring the story. It's hard to follow the story because the art is drawing so much attention to itself with weird angles and poor composition, in my mind. I will say that later, they toned that down. They brought on a different artist, and they had a regular DC inker, Alfredo Alcala, do the inking, and it really improved the series. The other thing about this is that I don't know if they had no faith in the book or not, but each issue is kind of self-contained. It does build up to a story later on because we keep hearing about something bad that happened in John Constantine's past, and he's kind of revisiting the people who were involved with it. But each story is a separate story, and because of that, the ideas in it don't have room to breathe. They're very cramped. These are ideas that could have been better expressed if they were 2 or 3 issues. But instead, some of the times the stories are just so cramped that John Constantine almost isn't a character in the story. He's just, he's the one who's there when something happens. The Swamp Thing crossover, however, is much better because there's a story that has room to breathe. And what it was a story by Rick Veitch. It was that Swamp Thing and Abby wanted to have a child, but Swamp Thing didn't have the proper equipment. So what would happen is that Swamp Thing borrowed John Constantine's body, put his essence into it to impregnate Abby. It also ties in with one of the stories in Hellblazer. And that's really the only story in this trade paperback that worked for me. The rest of it, it really feels like it was finding its way. And the thing is, at the time, we were all, oh, wow, this is something new from DC. But as time has gone on, we've seen how this was kind of baby steps into a world of doing more adult-themed horror rather than the type of horror story like in The Twilight Zone that you talked about, which is, okay, it's a twist-ending story. It's, you know, none of the characters continue, et cetera, et cetera. Hellblazer was trying to do the Alan Moore horror, and it took them about a year to figure it out. So what I would do if you want to read the Hellblazer stuff, you're going to be sort of thinking, oh, I should start with the first volume. You should start with a later volume and come back to it, because if you read that this first volume, you're not going to want to read any more. It's very, I don't want to say experimental, but it's very much that everybody involved from editorial to coloring didn't quite get what they were doing yet. The coloring also is really bad with the art. They do a lot of where it's the color is all the same in a panel to give a mood. And the coloring to me just does not help the art. It more obscures the art because it's going for a, we want to look very different on the stands. Rather than, again, by issue 13, 14, 15, they toned that back and it's okay. We're going to use a regular color palette so that the story becomes more important than how obscure we can make it and how indie we can make it look. So on our scale of buy, borrow, or ignore, this is a borrow, and it's a borrow after you've been introduced to the character John Constantine in later volumes. Joe?
All right. If I say Neil Gaiman, would you buy it?
Yes.
If I say Colleen Doran, would you buy it?
Yes.
You lucky guy. They both have a book out to Dark Horse Books, the Neil Gaiman Library, called Chivalry. It's a hardcover book. And again, as I wrote on Colleen's page, I see Neil Gaiman's name. I see your name, much less Neil Gaiman's name, and I'm buying it. And I had the advantage where, I must have talked about this. I'm pretty sure I talked about this in a preview episode that I was going to buy it. And when I got it, obviously, you look on the cover and you see there's an old lady having tea. You see an obvious knight and you see a cup. So with chivalry, you would think, oh, well, this must have something to do with King Arthur legends. And of course it does. I didn't even notice. I just jumped into the book right away. And so I just went along with it. And Neil starts it so wonderfully. And the art by Colleen Doran is just gorgeous. And it's just every Thursday afternoon, Mrs. Whitaker walked down to the post office to collect her pension, even though her legs were no longer what they were. And on the way back home, she would stop at the Oxfam shop and buy herself a little something. It just starts so ordinary, you know, I'm going to have to read the back to tell you what it's about, because the elderly British widow, she buys what turns out to be the Holy Grail from a secondhand shop, setting her off on an epic visit from an ancient knight who lures her with ancient relics in hopes of winning the cup. Another delightful, humorous, and sweet fantasy graphic novel adaptation of a Neil Gaiman short story brought to you by, well, they list all these awards that Neil has won. Eisner, Bram Stoker, Ringo, Neil Gaiman, and Colleen Doran. Of course, Colleen Doran I've always had a soft spot for because she's one of the few people we actually had as a guest way back when in the Hot Comic days in the early shop. If you go to my Facebook page, you can actually see some of the pictures with me and my old employee, Mike, as she visited. If you like, I mean, this is just a wonderfully, wonderful story. I enjoyed it immensely. The art was just gorgeous. I'm going to say that word about a dozen and two times because Colleen knocked it out of the ballpark. And she even talks about in the back, they have a little thing where Colleen talks about working the art on this. And there's extras. I mean, you get the covers of some stuff. But she talks about how she made – it's a real technical article about how she drew or draw and painted all this stuff, how what worked, what didn't. And she says that there is a lot of detail that just doesn't show up in what she did in the way it printed. However, her artwork is currently being shown somewhere, no one nearby me, so I'm not going to see it. So if you get a chance to see it, and if she ever sells it, you will get more out of seeing the artwork in person than you might not just by seeing it on the page. I don't know what else I can add to this. I mean, I bought this. I would put this at a definite buy. I had so much fun going into this book. And yeah, I kind of remember what it was about. And you kind of look at it. I didn't read the back cover, but I had no idea where it was going. I had no idea what the old lady was, a widower. I had no idea who the knight was. I figured it was the Holy Grail because right away she says she uncovered something. And next to the book she uncovered, on its side was the Holy Grail. A little paper sticker on it, the base written on it, and felt was, in pen was the price, 30 pence. This is nice, she said. It'll look nice on the mantelpiece. That's how she found the Holy Grail. Just no giant quest. Just, it was in a secondhand store. This could be why I love secondhand stores. I urge you to go out. Pretty much anything in the Neil Gaiman library, I've enjoyed. And, of course, the Snow Glass Apples was a twist on the Snow White. And the other one, why can't I think of it? Troll. Oh, here we go, right on the back of it. Let's see if I can find it here. They have a whole list of all the things he's done. American Gods, the Neil Gaiman Library, Trollbridge, which I guess was a short story that later got expanded into a graphic novel format. And again, very different art from Colleen, so it's always wonderful to see what she's up to. I highly, highly recommend this. I can't rave enough about it. I hope my raving has convinced you to go out and buy it. Again, I don't want to give up too much about it, but especially when it's something new. I mean, I'll blather on about a comic 50, 60 years old, and this is always something I have trouble with the newer books because I don't want to give it too much away, but you know, you should be able to find this. I think it was shrink-wrapped when I bought it, but I opened it and read it, and it's definitely worth picking up. If not now, wait till they do the collected edition, the Neil Gaiman libraries. I usually don't because I tend to buy his stuff as it comes out in singular hardcovers. But there's three hardcovers you can pick up, and you'll be pretty much caught up. Chivalry is not in it because it just got published. I mean, I just got it in my last box day. So again, on our scale, buy, borrow, ignore, I put this at a buy. And I think you, did you buy it, Corey?
I am waiting for it to be collected.
But that's still a buy. So you got two buys on this one.
Yes. The next of the books that I have in my big old stack of books to read, Alien Volume 1 from Marvel, the Marvel version of Alien. This is written by Philip Kennedy Johnson and drawn by Salvador LaRocca, who is probably best known for his work on the X-Men with Chris Claremont, but he's been working for Marvel for over 20 years. This was the first story that Marvel did once they got the rights to Alien, because they were with Dark Horse, and then Fox got sold to Marvel. So as soon as the contracts were up, any of the Fox licenses, Marvel has first crack at them. This story is set after the movies. You don't need to have ever read any other Alien comic, but you do need to have watched the movies because it references Promethea. It references Alien and Aliens. They do have a timeline at the beginning to let you know when it is set. This is the story of a person who had encountered the aliens and is now retiring and wants to reconnect with his son, but his son does not like the corporation, which is in all the Alien movies. So his son steals his information about the aliens and is going to go and get them, and everything falls apart. The thing about Alien is it is a horror comic. And Joe, what is the first rule of horror?
I don't know. Never go off alone.
Anyone can die at any time.
Oh.
So do not get attached to any of the characters in this comic. One of the things that I really liked about it was it's not trying to set up an Alien series where we're going to have characters that we followed through for 50 to 100 issues. No, it is continuing the story, but also letting us know that each of these volumes is going to be different. I liked the story a lot, and the reason it worked so well, Salvador La Roca, who in the past Marvel liked his pencils so much that on Extreme X-Men, they actually just shot from the pencils. They didn't do the inking. His work here, the facial expressions, the humanity on all of the characters is almost photorealistic. I don't know if he used models or what, but the book just shines in how well the art draws the characters and draws their emotions. It throws out a few new ideas with the aliens. It also gives us some stuff that we've seen before and hints to what is coming in the future. As I mentioned, there are hints about Promethea, which was a movie that when it came out, it wasn't until you saw the movie that you realized it was a prequel to Alien. Marvel really did a good job, and it's different from the Dark Horse stuff. I like the Dark Horse Alien series. I think that Marvel is kind of going in a different direction where they're taking from the movies and moving forward, but realizing Alien isn't about the characters in the movies. It's about the aliens and the corporation trying to turn them into bioweapons and is moving forward from there. On the buy, borrow, and ignore, this is a solid buy. Beautiful, beautiful art. The story is creepy. It's a horror comic. And even though I don't get scared by horror comics, I just don't. This comic was really good at giving you that really creepy, drippy, not gross out, but just that feeling of uncomfortableness that the alien movies do at their best. Joe?
All right. Oh, boy, I don't know what to pick. Well, I mentioned the omnibus. I guess I will talk about my omnibus. I've been real hesitant to bring omnibuses to work because they're big, they're bulky, and, you know, they get home, and if I've damaged it, I feel really stupid. But I do love reading them. And I pulled out my – and this must be a reprint because I just got it, but it was – oh, look at that. There's a scratch already. But damn it all, I read it.
How dare you?
How dare I read an omnibus? Fantastic Four – Hickman Volume 1.
It is a reprint.
Yeah, I figured it is because I thought at first it was a done-in-one, but apparently there's a second volume, which is available right now on the eBays. So I will probably be buying it rather than wait to get it. Although I might check, you know, I got because it's still like newer, I'll be able to pick the cover and pick the format and get it used or new. But the one thing, I love Hickman's writing. Hickman is probably one of the things that you can always tell an old fart comic reader on eBay because, they just don't write them the way I used to. Yeah, done in one with maybe part one, part two in a crossover or the theme kind of going, oh, will he or won't he date Gwen Stacy, whatever. I totally, totally disagree with that because, yeah, if I want to read those comics, I still can. But Hickman is a newer breed of writer. And here's where I always had trouble reading Hickman from issue to issue because he will drop something one issue and not pick it up for maybe another 10. The big one I remember in the Avenger run where I think it was Thor and Sentry. No, not Sentry. Hyperion. Took off to the other side of the universe to see what was going on. This was all before Secret Wars and all that. And then I pick up an issue and it's dealing with those two. I had totally blanked that they took off like 10 issues earlier. Again, the issues may be off, but you get what I'm saying. When you sit down and you read Hickman, though, in order, and you can read it, he's basically designed – I'm not the comic reader – that Hickman's designed for because I tend to forget things from issue to issue, if not, you know, between 10 issues. But when I read this in this format, the omnibus format, it gels. It makes sense. It's all that's where he was going. And that's why when you finally get to the end game, or, you know, he'll reveal little bits like when Franklin shows a vision and it's like, oh, but that happened at the end of the run. It just tied together. So well. Jason Aaron does it. Dan Slott does it. I love this type of storytelling. I may not be hip to it when it comes out, but boy, when I reread it all at once, and you know, I've got the omnibuses, I've got Aaron's run on Thor and paperbacks, I've got all the individual issues and Immortal Hulk ready to go. So I read this, and this collects Dark Reign, Fantastic Four, 1 to 5, Fantastic Four, 570 to 588, and then the FF 1 through 5 with material from Dark Reign, the Cabell one-shot. Absolutely loved it. Love it. The art is phenomenal, very stylish. It's on the glossy paper. It looks very, very good. I can't really get into the art because there are all sorts of different people did the art. I am a Hickman fan. I mean, he's one of those guys. Again, I see his name, I will definitely consider buying it. I love reading everything and just having it come out. Plus, I'm able to go back if, like, I miss something, like, who is this guy? Go back. Oh, he was a few issues later. I can understand why some people may not enjoy this type of storytelling or Hickman, because if, you know, this is, I hate to be snobbish, but this is thinking person's comic, because you have to remember what happened before. He's not going to make it easier on you. He's not going to drop footnotes. Oh, this occurred back in Fantastic Four 560, the very beginning of the run. Go back and reread it. I think Hickman just assumes you're smart enough to go along with it. And again, I'm not, but in the omnibus form, it's fantastic. And I've got tons of omnibuses. I just haven't been reading them because, like I said, I got a little, well, it's a scratch what'd you call it? Not the book, but the slipcase.
Dust cover.
But, you know, whatever. These are meant to be read. Hell, I got the Secret Wars 2 omnibus that I read. And I just thought it was just a blast. And I believe this rolls into his work on Avengers, doesn't it, Corey?
Yes, it does. The Avengers directly follows it. And I would say, if you want to read this entire story, because it actually starts in his Ultimate Avengers, then kind of moves to the Marvel Universe in Secret Warriors, then goes to Fantastic Four, the Avengers, and it all wraps up in Secret Wars. And if you look at it as a whole, remember about a year ago, I said I was going to read the whole thing. There are plot threads dropped in that Ultimate Avengers that don't pay off till Secret Wars. Hickman has talked in the past about how he went to college for design, which is why his comics look so different. He designs how the book is going to look. But when he thinks of story, he thinks of it as a design as well. And one of the things I really liked when he was doing the book, he would have on the recap page, you would have that circle of the Fantastic Four, and there would be Reed at the top, and then Sue over here, and then between Reed and Sue would be Franklin and Valeria. Why? Because they're connected to them. And he would show the connections between the characters. And as you read the story, again, you can see that he designed it. It was, this is going to lead here, this is going to lead here, this is going to lead here. Which is something that more writers do than people think. When you read people like Philip Roth or Philip K. Dick or, Tom Wolfe, you can tell by reading it that they have sat down and their plot is visual. You know, this is going to go into this and this is going to go into this. Hickman does that same thing. And he's a very big idea person, as you saw with his X-Men. I give this a buy as well. I have both of the omnibuses because the second omnibus showed up a little while back. And I've read Hickman's whole thing up to Secret Wars over the last year. And his Fantastic Four run was very different from what people expected. He came off of the JMS run and the Mark Waid run. Mark Waid, probably one of the most traditional Fantastic Four writers. His stuff reminds me a lot of burn in that he just went back, I want the Fantastic Four when I was a kid. JMS did I've Got Ideas for the Fantastic Four. And the problem was he left during Civil War and left a lot of stuff up in the air that other writers had to clean up. And then Hickman came in and said, I'm going to write a science fiction comic. Not I'm going to write a superhero comic. He wrote a science fiction comic that just happened to have superhero elements. Just wonderfully put together. And it's one of those things where a lot of people talk about how they want their a comic to matter and be part of the larger universe. Well, Hickman does that, even though each issue seems very, you know, if you can read a Hickman story, and in a way you get a conclusion with each issue. But it feeds into this much larger story he's telling. And that's a skill that not a lot of people have. So I give it a buy as well. And like you said, this is, I wouldn't say it's an adult thing. I think it's more you have to be a careful reader and you have to be a serious reader. It's like what I told people about Grant Morrison. Grant Morrison's easy to understand if you pay attention to the story. If you're just doing a flip through and reading it on a very surface level, you're going to get confused. This is something you have to turn the TV off. Don't listen to a podcast. Just read it like you would read a novel. And it works so much better. My last one is actually a regular comic that came out a couple of weeks ago, Joe.
Ooh.
And that is Flashpoint Beyond Number Zero by Jeff Johns and Eduardo Rizzo. When Flashpoint, the miniseries, came out 10 years ago, they said it was a big deal, but they didn't tell us it was going to be this universe-changing miniseries. So that when they announced the new 52, it kind of took everybody by surprise. And now that we know all the behind-the-scenes stuff, we know why. Because it was very much, hey, can we latch this onto what you're doing? Okay. So Flashpoint Zero starts with the Thomas Wayne Batman realizing that things did not change the way he had planned them to. They really don't bring you up to speed on it. They tie in stuff from Doomsday Clock and the original Flashpoint and the other Thomas Wayne appearances. And like Jeff Johns does, he pulls little continuity bits from here and there and here and there. It does start off with another one of those Jeff Johns chalkboards showing, you know, it has some of the stuff that was on the chalkboard last time we saw Thomas Wayne, and some of it is crossed out, like we averted this. I did like that 5G was crossed out. This was averted. And it goes into a story about how Thomas Wayne realizes what is wrong, and what is wrong is that Barry Allen did not become the Flash. So he needs to fix that. However, there are forces that do not want that fixed. And the story goes from there. So, problem number one I have with this. If you haven't read all the stuff leading up to it, you're going to get lost. He doesn't really have the space to catch us up, other than a little hint here, a little hint there. And in my mind, the book suffers for it. Because with a first issue or a zero issue, either one, you should be able to set the stage because you know this is going to get collected in a trade paperback. You know it's going to be available. And there's nothing in there that says, here's what you need to have read before to read this. Why do I see that as a flaw? Because for me, I'm not keyed into the DC universe as tightly as I used to be. I used to really know the DC universe. Then after New 52, I kind of backed away. And I came back with Rebirth thinking, okay, they're going to tighten up the continuity. They're going to fix stuff. And then they kind of faded away from that. So I would only read the stuff for the creators I enjoyed. So here's another kind of jumping on point for lack of another term.
Oh.
And they don't bring you in enough. The second problem I have with it is, why is it a zero issue? Because as I'm reading the issue, it's like, no, this is the start of the story. A zero issue is usually, here's what happens before the story starts. But this was very much, here's where the story is starting. Here's where things are, you know, this is your inciting incident. And the zero just seems like a gimmick for the sake of a gimmick for the sake of a gimmick, rather than using the idea of the zero issue is catching you up on everything you need to know before the number one. Or here's the stuff that happened before our inciting incident in issue one. That all being said, Geoff Johns is a fantastic superhero writer who plays in shared universes. He's one of the best at giving you a cliffhanger. I remember when he was writing JSA, his cliffhangers were some of the best in comics, because you would read it and you would go, I have absolutely no idea how he's going to get out of this. And the same thing with Flashpoint. When I got to the end, I have no idea how he's going to get out of this. When is the next issue out? Eduardo Rizzo's art is very evocative of what he's trying to get. One of my problems with a lot of DC art is everything is done at night. But they don't draw it like it's at night. They just color it like it's at night. Rizzo, however, is excellent at using the night sequence for shadow, deep shadow, using shadow to show motion and form that a lot of people who at DC aren't able to do, because they're just drawing it and not really, the colorist will take care of the light source. Rizzo is very aware of the light source, uses it in a way that gives the comic a mood. It makes it seem, this is the DC universe, only a step darker. And he uses his art and the shadows to give us that. There are also some really big sequences where he just fills that page. And there are a lot of artists who, when they get a big sequence and they do a full page or a two-page spread, it just feels like they drew a regular panel bigger. Rizzo makes it much more dramatic by using angle and shadow and detail to really give you that pop to bring that image off the page. It's incredibly effective when he uses it. And he's one of the few people who is able to use that big image to give you that widescreen feel. In the end, I give this a buy with that caveat that if you didn't read Doomsday Clock, forget it, you're not going to know what's going on. If you didn't read the original Flashpoint, forget it, you're not going to know what's going on. And if you haven't sort of followed the Thomas Wayne stuff in Batman, you're going to go, I don't understand this. I don't get this. So it's a buy with a caveat. You know what you should buy without any caveats, Joe?
Oh, I hate caveats in my pizza. Get caught in my teeth.
You need to get some protection while you're out on the internet. And you can get that from NordVPN right here. Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest, if you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you, you could accidentally download a keylogger, all sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files that backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net/SH3KU, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a 1 month plan, a 2 year plan, a 1 year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And boy, I'm Joe, I'm turning back into that podcasting monster. We had a podcast drop on Monday, an interview with Nyla Rose for a comic that comes out today. And every Wednesday and Friday, I do podcasts over at PWInsiderElite.com about wrestling. But why should I go on and on about it when I've already recorded this? The Solitaire Rose Podcast Network is filled with all kinds of audio goodness. First, there's Crazy Comics and Stories. It's been going since 2010. It drops every Monday, and it has me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and Joe, Crazy Writer, talking comics, shenanigans, and whatever we're freaking and geeking about every Monday morning. It's been going since 2010, and it's available at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. Also on that same feed is the Solitaire Rose Podcast, which is me, again, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, doing interviews, talking about comics history, pretty much talking about whatever I want to talk about. We've also got Solo Joe, where Joe Crazy Writer does a solo podcast, and he hasn't done one in a while, so kick him in the shins to get him started. We also, on that same feed, have Solitaire Rose Series and Review, where we do DVD commentary of older comic book series. That's all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. I also do a podcast with Wolfie B. Bad at badadvice.solitairerose.com, where we take listener questions and give them bad advice. There's also Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. There's also Fantastic Forecast, where myself and Adam Vermillion are going through the entire run of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time. That's fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. There are always more podcasts at the Solitaire Rose Podcast Network. Be there. Aloha. And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show.
Oh, we spell oops backwards so it says spoo?
No, not where Joe gets mad at me because I had to go to the bathroom after I got done with work.
It was 7 minutes of my life.
No, it's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
All sorts of stuff. I thought we'd take a quick look. Some of the non-comic things that I've sold. I sold a Batman Arkham City PC DVD game from 2011 that was pre-owned and complete. I had a copy of a poetry book called Tree-Spirited Woman by Colleen Baldurica. It was signed and actually included a promotional bookmark that I had. And I think, when did I buy this? I bought it up on the North Shore just because it was signed, and I actually had every intention of reading it, but I just never got around to it. So, hey, I'm reading my omnibuses. Leave me alone. So, someone got a good deal. I sold a book from, oh, good grief, when did this thing come out? Way back in 1986, called The MIDI Book, Using MIDI and Related Interfaces. And this was, MIDI was a way that you connected your electronic instrument to a computer in order to make music. I obviously had some intention of doing that way back in 1986. And just as I'm digging through stuff, you know, trying to sort which books I should keep or go, I discovered, oh, there are still some people doing that. So I sold that. The final non-comic thing I sold was a South Park Mr. Garrison's Mr. Hack sticker. One of the remnants left over from my hot comic days. And I still got a few left, so if you're interested, you know they're there. We were talking about continued stories, and I thought I would just, I ran across one because as I'm digging through some stuff, I ran across an old image book called Celestine. It's in the hyper-formatted early image style where the women are long-legged, round hips, impossible waist, big boobs, full lips, hair going everywhere. And I was trying to figure out where it came from. And apparently, it was a two-issue series that came after the Violator versus Bedrock series. And Corey, what's significant about that?
That was written by Alan Moore.
Yes. And he created this character, Celestine. And apparently in the Violator Bedrock miniseries, came out in 95, Alan Moore, Brian Denham did the art. And for some reason, Violator, Spawn's worst enemy, decided to go after Bedrock, who was a Youngblood member. Again, this is probably back when Todd and Rob liked each other. I think they like each other now. I just, whatever. There was, go read the Image 30 Years book or whatever. You'll get what I'm talking about. Anyways, during the book, Violator convinces Celestine to go after Bedrock, but he ends up attacking her. The Celestine book deals with where do angels go when they're died? Because she was tricked by the Violator. She was the supreme angel of the Lord. She was forced to sacrifice herself to save the world. And now she's in hell. And heaven doesn't necessarily want her back. This was written by Warren Ellis with art by Patrick Lee, which could explain why it actually holds up as a pretty decent series. There's only two issues. After that, the book went into a crossover, Gloria Angela, Angels in Hell. It was written by Rob Liefeld, Jim Valentino, art by, I think, Patrick Lee and Andy Park. Again, a crossover where Glory, who is an Amazonian woman of wonder, oh, I wonder where that came from, and Angela, probably never heard of this character, not a couple hacks, McFarlane, Neil Gaiman again, they get together and they try to rescue Celestine's soul from the pits of hell. You flip it over, it's also got a Dark Child preview, which was Randy Queen's property. After that, there's a Glory Celestine crossover through Image. Mary Jo Duffy writes it. Patrick Lee does the art again. I don't know where she goes after that, but it was just kind of interesting. You get these four separate series. They all tie together. You got to read them and decide. Obviously, going from Alan Moore, Warren Ellis, I don't know how the quality is on the other ones. I know I've had these crossovers. I might even have one in my eBay stuff, but I'll have to go check it out. Let's see what kind of fun you can find. Finally, I do want to say, I'm always up to having people contact me, but, Travis, who sells under the eBay name Bloyin 36, it's B-L-O-U-I-N 36, contacted me and had the audacity to ask me if I wanted to trade a copy of Simpsons Comics Belly Up Belly Buster graphic novel from 2004 for a kind of a beat up copy of Teen Titans number 13, which had a Christmas cover because he knew I did Christmas covers. And I was appalled. Not because I have a copy of Teen Titans 13, but he dared ask me for a trade. And I said, no, because you are a beloved listener to this here show. I'm going to send you the Simpson Comics Belly Buster soft cover graphic novel from 2014 Bongo Comics. Even though it's pre-owned, it's only very fine near mint, I will send it to them. How dare he have the audacity to ask me for a trade? I don't do that. I like to take care of our podcast listeners. So if you see something you like, you know what to do. Send me an email via eBay, make an offer. I got tons of stuff. I got more stuff coming. I love the podcast listeners that you listen to us for the last 10 years. New and old, doesn't matter. If you see something you like on my eBays, you know what to do. K-R-A-Y-Z, come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, oh. no, not where I brag about the fact that I got a new big old box of kitchen cooked potato chips from the Utz Potato Chip Company and didn't have to pay for shipping. No, it's Freaking and Geeky Joe. What are you freaking on?
Not really freaking on much. I mean, we didn't talk about the weather because we had a lot to cover, but we went from like a 70-degree humid day to a possibility of severe thunderstorms to where we're hanging now, which is about, well, yesterday was pretty nice. It was like 50 degrees and sunny, which is nice because when it's sunny out, you get warm. But today it was like 44 and cloudy and kind of dismal and gray. And you'd think it's fall around here, but the stuff is trying to grow. I'm 3 weeks away from getting cut open to get my hernia taken care of. That's pretty much it. You know, work's actually going pretty good. And other than that, I'll talk more about that in geeking. Corey, what you freaking on?
Things are going pretty smoothly for me as well. I've gotten into a nice little groove of my Saturday is my day off, so that's what I do. All of my house stuff, pay the bills, do the grocery shopping, do the laundry, clean up, et cetera, et cetera. In the I make sure I'm done so that, okay, I have to work early tomorrow. I'm good. It's Saturday night. I'm going to at least do something Saturday night-ish. So this week I watched movies that I recorded off TCM. The group home's been rather calm lately. The only thing that's really been bugging me is at my office job, we're getting a lot of turnover. A lot of people who've been there for a while are leaving. Part of it is because there's been leadership changes. Part of it is because, hey, with unemployment at 3%, there's a lot of open jobs, and there are some people who are looking at that grass on the other side of the fence, thinking it's a little greener. So people I've been working with for a while, matter of fact, one of the people she started the same day as me, put in her notice, tomorrow's her last day. Now, I don't work in the office anymore, but it is kind of weird that, you know, there's so much turnover. Although it does make it so they're a little more dependent upon me because I've been there for 5 years and know all the ins and outs and ups and downs and am doing more and more reports. The weather has kind of been bugging me because here we are, it's the end of April, and I'm still having to keep the heat on, which is funny because the heating company sent me an email. You're using a lot more natural gas than you did last year. Last year at this time it was 80 degrees, but I have not had a day where I'm able to go and sit out on the deck and read me some funny books. I've had to sit in the house and read me some funny books, which is okay, but I'm starting to get a little spring fever, wanting to get out, even if it's just, you know, the 20 steps over to the deck. But I have much more stuff that I'm geeking on. So, Joe, what are you geeking on?
Well, see, I did go out. And sometimes even like on a Wednesday, I just hopped in the car and took a little drive and just kind of enjoyed it. So, and you got a new car. You get better gas miles than me. So, yeah, just if you get some time, it's so easy to get wrapped up. Like, you know, I'm sitting in the basement with thousands of things I want to get on the eBays, and it takes time to do. But what I did, because I also need to get stuff in order, as I brought, and when my wife helped me, we did kind of a cleaning binge in the basement. I took all the boxes that I accumulated over the wintertime of all the stuff that I've gotten from Discount Comic Book Service and eBays and things like that, and I don't want to throw the boxes away because I got things to mail in them. So we took them all out of the basement. And I took a picture of them, and I put them on the Minnesota Toy, I think the Minnesota Comic Book Squad, and she said, this is my entire winter's worth of boxes. And they're in the garage, not necessarily sorted, but now when I need to find them, I know where they are. It helped uncover things, which is nice. My wife was able to get through some areas. We did have a slight setback because we have one of those portable showers. When we first got here, we didn't have a shower in the house. So this is like 31 years ago. So we put a portable shower in downstairs, and we had a drain into the drain. 120% against any code, but it worked. And we haven't used it in a long time because we modified our claw tub to have a shower. And for you plumbing people, you know what I'm talking about. The rest of you, don't worry about it. Anyway, so I figured, you know what? It's time to disconnect the shower and tear it down and throw it out, which will open up an area of the basement we can, you know, use for other storage. So I start to undo the hose, and it squirts water out at me. And I didn't turn it off. Shit, I thought it had been turned off all these years because we haven't used it in decades. So I tighten it back up, but I could not get the old-fashioned, you know, circular spigot to turn. And I couldn't get the water off. And I'm like, well, son of a bitch. We just had our plumber come in, like, about a month ago. He did a bunch of stuff for us. And we're like, now we're going to have to get him back because I can't get this. Well, fortunately, my daughter's boyfriend, who is younger, does not have arthritis in his hand, and is a lot stronger, was able, with copious amounts of WD-40, to able to turn those spigots off, which was nice. So now the water's off. I'm just letting it dry up. And then I'm going to, next week when I have my 2 days off, again, I don't have 3 days off anymore. That's a minor freaking tomorrow because I got to go to work. But, hey, I've got out of the buses. Anyways, so we're working on the basement. We're trying to get it going. On another geeking note, you know, I've been very proud of my wife. She retired. She just got a new job.
Oh!
One she wants. So
that didn't last long.
No, not really. They really, really want her. She wants kind of some, she's looking forward to having some time off because she's got all this time she has to burn through her saved vacation. And, you know, again, I got my surgery coming up in a couple of weeks. So we'll see how that negotiates out. But I'm very, very impressed, very proud of her. I did do on my last Friday off, I did a final geeking because, as you know, the MCBF's got a show coming up. So I dropped off some flyers. I went up to Remix, which is the record store shop. I think I brought you there, Corey. Up in
yes,
the Fort
we have been
yeah.
there.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Picked up a bunch of stuff cheap, some expensive stuff, some stuff I found out I had, so it's going on the eBays. Always a pleasure to go up there and talk with Tim. We talked the same language. Had to cut it short because I had other things to do, but, you know, if you ever get a chance to go up there, tell him that Joe Ryder from Crazy Podcast. He remembers me from Hot Comics, so he'll remember that as well. So tell him you said hi. It's always worth digging through his stuff. It's always churning comics. Always got new stuff in. So it's always. And if you like record albums and CDs, I was able to find a. I can't say it. Era Salt was like a rock band in the 90s that I just started to listen to. Just showed up on my YouTube feed, and I guess they reunited. Just had an album come out 2004. 14, whatever. He had one. I was like, oh, cool, you got it. So, very high. I haven't gone to the eBays to pick him up. And yeah, everything's on YouTube. But I'm an old guy. My cop car still has a CD player in it. Speaking of which, went out, got new tires for it. Apparently, the cop tires were leaking. So, by the time I went down there to get the tires, I only had like 11 pounds of air in them. But oddly enough, these tires were, the cop tires are very solid. They're designed to work under pressure. Underpressured. But you want to be sued. So anyways, I had new tires for my car. The other thing that happened is the Toy Posse had one of their shows over the weekend. Ran into a guy who was selling comics. Well, two for a buck. 50 cents a piece. I went nuts. I should have gone nutter, but I ran out of time because I can only go and then I got to get up and, you know, leave and go to work. And I picked up a large collection of lethargic lads, so I can't wait to crack into that. Some other books. I found the Incredible Hulk issue where Rom was in it because I don't, you know, they can't reprint it because it's Rom, and I'm pretty sure I don't have mine.
I want to find the Incredible Hulk issue that Butch has the page of. Hulk, love you, Sally.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to look that one up. So, a couple good shows. I don't know when Toy Posse is having another show. They're moving to outdoor shows over at a VFW over in Minneapolis. And once they get it set up, they're going to announce it. I actually sent them a note saying, hey, I like to talk about going to the Toy Posse. It's a lot of fun. It's free. and you can, it's, you know, I go there without anything in mind. So I always come home surprised with what I got. The one thing I got, and if I can find it, there's a Hot Wheel car out. There it is, way over here. It's called Coupe Clip. And you look at it, and it's really strange because it's obviously a Hot Wheel mold. No wheels. It's a solid piece. But it's a keychain. And naturally, it's driving collectors crazy because when you find them, everybody's buying them and reselling them. So I just bought one of those. Then I bought this Matchbox super fast London bus. You know, where it has the door on the left side because they drive on the wrong side of the road. I just remember having one of these as a kid and peeling off the sticker. And then I found out without the sticker, the top comes off and you can take the insides out and it evaporated after that. So it's kind of a childhood thing. It was cheap, so I got it. And now let's see if Corey knows. And this isn't necessarily a fair question. What does the return of Microcon, Action Force number 1 from Lightning Comics, and Warlord number 63 have in common?
Well, Warlord 63 would be by Dan Jurgens. And he has been at a bunch of conventions, so maybe he'll be at Microcon. But I don't know about Action Heroes.
That is Gordon Purcell's
first comic
book work. And the reason I bought it, I probably paid way too much for it, but the guy who had it, it's Action Force was done. Let's see if I can read the ink. 1987. And this one's autographed by the creator and the writer, Jim Main, but it's also penciled by Gordon Purcell. And Steve Shipley inked a lot of it, and Gordon Purcell also gets credit for inking too. And the reason I got them is because, as you surmise, Corey, both Dan and Gordon are going to be at Microcon Comic Show, which will be Saturday, May 14th, 2022, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Mermaid Entertainment Events Center in Moundsview. You can go to their webpage, their Facebook page, get more information. I don't know if any of the guests are going to be there, or other than Gordon. I'm pretty sure there will be other guests. But I just figured I'd get both these books, the one I got in fine shape from Mile High, the other one I got direct from another guy. And I just figure I'll just have them sign the first works they ever did and put it in my collection, because I got a lot of local artists that, you know, I find out what their first work is and then through hell and high water find it and have them autograph it at the next show. The one that really I'm a little torqued about, and it's not anybody's fault, it's just the way things are, I found our buddy Terrence Creep's first work, and it's in a Flare comic from AC, I believe, because I had asked that the last 2-day FallCon, Terrence had a copy, which was, yeah, it was kind of like, well, okay, I can understand why you have these other books because you wrote them. What's with this? And he goes, well, an inside is a reprint of my first comic book work. And I opened it up and I found out what it was. And I suppose by next podcast, I'll let you know. And actually, Corey, while you're talking, you're geeking, I'll go see if I can find it. Well, obviously, I wanted to surprise him and sign it the next show, but COVID kind of killed that. And I don't know if Microcon will ever be big enough to have Terrence come back in. Plus, on Saturdays, he's usually wrestling. Well, Spider Baby's wrestling. I don't know where Terrence goes. So I suppose I could contact Terrence and say, hey, I got a copy of this. I have no idea when I'm going to see it. You want to meet up for lunch and I can get your autograph?
Oh, well. That would be fun.
That would be fun. So it's something to try. But that's pretty much all I'm geeking on. Like I said, lots of reading. Things are going well. A little tiny itch in the back of my brain. Yeah, well, something's going to go bad. Anyways, Corey, what you geeking on?
First thing I am geeking on is an announcement that was made today. In the Hollywood Reporter, there is a new comic book company coming out.
Again?
Frank Miller is going to be self-publishing from now on. And Frank Miller's got his own company now. His stuff is being edited by Dan DiDio, of all people. So Frank Miller announced that there would be new Sin City stories and a sequel to Ronin, Also, this weekend, which by the time you hear this will be over, is Small Bookstore Day on Saturday, the 30th. And our pal over at Dreamhaven, Greg Ketter, is having a big celebration there. I'm probably going to drop by if I get a chance to partake of the sale, and he's going to be giving away stuff, and stuff will be on sale, and it's going to be a big to-do, even though it's like the last few times I've been, I still have the stuff I have from our last Geek Day where we went over to Dreamhaven, and I got that grocery bag of cheap books. Then the week after that is Free Comic Book Day.
Woo-hoo!
Which I look forward to every year. It's always fun to get in the car with Joe and Butch and take off into the wild. And the good thing is I don't have to plan anything, because normally I'm the one who plans everything out in painful detail. But no, I let Joe drive. I just sit back and enjoy and say, I want to make it to Books Unlimited. And that's really about the only store that I want to go to. Any place else that Joe and Butch want to go, I'm all for. Comic-wise, not only am I rereading the Hellblazer stuff, and I have read up to issue 24, I may just start saying, yeah, now I've read up to issue here. But issue 24, boy, the second year of that book is light years better than the first year. But I am also reading the Garth Ennis Punisher Max series in the omnibuses. And it's not a book that you can binge, because it is extremely violent, extremely dark, extremely Garth Ennis. I just read the 6-issue story, The Slavers, which is about how in Eastern Europe, they were kidnapping women and selling them into slavery. And Punisher runs across one of these places where it's happening and takes apart the group that's doing it in the most Punisher way possible. But the thing about Ennis's Punisher that I like so much is he really goes back to the roots of the men's adventure novels of the 70s and then takes out all the pulpy bullshit. He grabs something from the news, grabs something that he knows about as a European, and kind of says, all right, I'm going to have some colorful villains and the Punisher will kill them. He also is putting in some political stuff, which Garth Ennis is about as left as I am, maybe a little more. And as I'm reading these, it's funny because there's all the people who have the Punisher shirts who are, you know, far right wingers. And it's real clear that Garth Ennis does not believe any of that stuff and uses the character in so many ways to put forth his political, ethical, moral agenda in how he picks the villains that the Punisher is going to go after. And through the Max series, Punisher, Ennis worked with a lot of European artists. So the book looked very different from anything else on the stands. There were some that had a very sketchy, very, very art. You know, it looked like somebody drew it. Then there's other stuff where the artist is getting into photorealism. Then there's other stuff that's more expressionistic. And the art styles change for each story. Really, just such an excellent run of books. The last comic I read is a two-parter from Jim Rugg called Hulk Grand Design. And if you've read any of the Grand Design comics from Marvel, what it is, they get sort of an indie comic creator to tell the entire story of a character. Like with the X-Men Grand Design, it was, what if all of these stories were part of one large overarching story? And it kind of goes through picking through and turning a run of, you know, 300-400 comics into one single story. The Hulk story is so good in that he uses real world stuff along with the stuff in the comics. He creates a through line to make some of the Hulk's villains, such as the leader, seem much more important than they do as a character who, yeah, it's been about 3-4 years, time for the leader to show up again. No, he gives the leader a through line. He really delves into the Hulk's changes over the decades and makes it flow very seamlessly. If you've not read one of these grand design books, the Hulk one is a fantastic one to get because it's only 2 issues. It is a new way of looking at the entirety of the, quote, Marvel Universe, unquote. Much like that book that I picked up and haven't read yet, where the author read all the Marvel comics and turned it into a novel. This is more what I was thinking I was going to get with that, where it's, okay, I've read all of these Hulk books. I'm going to turn it into a single story.
The Hulk book's supposed to be 2?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay, so I got the first one. Cool. Haven't read it yet, but it's on the pile. It's on the
believe it or not, list. Kids.
I don't believe it.
You've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Thank you.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
You know, I had a joke about a flat tire here, but Corey, I'm going to spare you from it. Go on, hit my music. Funk is on a roll. Hey,
hey, hey, yo. Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here.
Done, bitches!